The polyphenols will, due to their antimicrobial effect, have an impact on the microbial community. And this condition will impact the production of short-chain fatty acids, but also the bile acid environment in the gut and may influence the growth of specific bacteria. And Akkermansia is quite resistant to many bile acids, but it also interacts with the epithelium to increase the amount of mucus and recreate this niche where many bacteria can colonize and favor Akkermansia.
Welcome to the Science, Microbes and Health podcast from the International Scientific Association for Probiotics and Prebiotics. We're a non-profit scientific organization also known as ISAP. I'm Marla Cunningham, ISAP's Executive Director. In our podcast, you'll hear about emerging topics across the fields of biotic substances and microbiome science. I hope you enjoy this episode with your host, Professor Colin Hill.
Hello, everybody. My name's Colin Hill, and today I'm flying solo because Dan Tancredi can't make it. And so today's guest is Yves Desjardins, who's from University Laval in Quebec in Canada. And Yves, you're a plant scientist, is that correct?
Yes, I'm a professional agrologist by training and plant physiologist. So it's been quite a journey going back to the gut microbiota.
Yeah, I can imagine. And normally when we have a plant scientist, or when we think of a plant scientist relative to the microbiota, we start to think fiber and, you know, root vegetables and things like that, and prebiotics. But that's not really your area of expertise. It's polyphenols. Tell us something about that. What are polyphenols?
Well, polyphenols are secondary metabolites that are synthesized by plants for a number of purposes. One is protection against biotic and abiotic stress. Probably the most important is fighting against bacteria and fungi, but they also involve in protection against UV, and also they play an important role in the growth of the plant and in the soil as messenger to have a proper soil microbiome. And so the link between human microbiome health and soil health and microbiome and the plant is easy to make.
So the plant is, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you, secreting polyphenols into the soil, almost like prebiotics, to promote the growth of the right microorganisms in the soil around it.
Yes, it does. the plant is secreting mucin, a mucus, and it hosts a community of bacteria. And it is very well known that they synthesize specific polyphenols to attract bacteria like rhizobium to allow to fix nitrogen. So you can see a corollary between basically humans and plant in this aspect.
And root systems also depend a lot on molds, don't they, to help them to degrade things in soil and so on? Is there any role for polyphenols?
There's an active role of the community to attack polysaccharides contained in soil organic matter and release it for absorption by the plant. So there's a very similar role of the microbiota around the root to that you can find in the human gut microbiota and mammalian gut microbiota.
And as a chemist, what are polyphenols? What's their structure? What do they look like?
Polyphenols it's a complex group. There's more than 10,000 different molecular species belonging to different families. And they're basically heterocycles that are oxygenated. They will have benzene type chemical structure, and they will have different functional groups, a lot of hydroxyl that will interact with different molecules. So they belong in two large families. You will find flavonoid type polyphenols and also non-flavonoid type. In plant, they are mostly accumulated in the epidermis. They will be stored in the vacuole of the epidermis or different tissues, but they can also be integral part of the cell wall, where they will bind to hemicellulose fibers. And in this sense, they are, when we talk about fibers and plant fibers, we have to talk to to talk about polyphenol fibers as well, because you will find some ferulic acid and synapic acid that are also linked to the polysaccharide portion of the plant material.
And what kind of plants are, I mean, are polyphenols, I presume they're ubiquitous in plants, but are
they? Ubiquitous. They're found in all plants.
Think of polyphenols, I think of things like blueberries, even maybe have it in my head, probably incorrectly, that the blue color is some kind of polyphenol related. Or
the color aspect comes from anthocyanin, which is a subclass of the flavonoids, and they confer color to plant and fruit in particular. But they're only a small fraction of the total polyphenols you will find into plant. And they've been more studies probably because of their color aspects and their ease of extraction and analysis. But there are other compounds in the plant that are much more ubiquitous and you will find in much larger concentration. Particularly one group of polyphenols are the tannins. And the tannins are we are consuming very large quantity in our normal diet, more than 1 gram per day, and they contribute to interact. They're not absorbed. They're really resilient to microbial degradation also, and they will accumulate in the gut and will have an impact on different health aspects.
And so when we eat any plant, then we're eating polyphenols.
Yeah. If you eat most plant will contain a large an important proportion of polyphenols.
Are they an essential nutrient for us, or can we make our own polyphenols? Can animals and insects make polyphenols?
That's an interesting story. In the 30s, they were considered as a vitamin type molecule, and they were called the K-type vitamin. But nowadays, they're not considered vitamins anymore, but they're essential components and they confer a lot of beneficial effect to health.
So we absorb them from plants. We don't make polyphenols ourselves.
No,
we don't genetically.
No, you are making similar type molecules from degradation of phenolic amino acids. And you will produce some benzoic acids and cinnamic acid from the degradation of proteins, but mostly the main thrust or the main quantity of polyphenols you are consuming comes from plants.
And leaving aside for a moment, because we're going to come back to it, the impact of polyphenols on microbes in the microbiome. Do we absorb those polyphenols in the upper GI tract, and do they get into our bloodstream and travel around the body? And what roles do they play if that's the case?
That's an interesting question. Indeed, you can absorb a fraction of most of the polyphenols. The small one you will absorb in the upper gastrointestinal tract, but most of them are glycosylated and they are not directly absorbed in the upper digestive tract, and they will reach the colon, where for molecules like anthocyanin, which are glycosylated, the sugar will be hydrolyzed and the anthocyanin or the flavonoid structure will be released, and it can further be degraded by the gut microbiota. So it's considered that only 5 to 10% of the molecules you ingest are absorbed and will go in circulation, but the rest of it goes in the microbiota to either be degraded or excreted at that point.
So some polyphenols maybe won't be acted on at all. It's we simply consume them and they'll be excreted out again.
Well, they will have a strong impact on your gut microbiota. They will interfere with due to their chemical structure. They have the ability to interfere with proteins and to bind very strongly to polysaccharides. So when you do an extraction, as soon as you make an extraction of a fruit, the polyphenol will be released and they will bind really rapidly to cell wall protein and cell wall polysaccharide. Then they will be consumed in the matrix and will reach the colon where they can be further metabolized by the gut microbiota.
So I assume usually any question to do with the microbiome, the answer is all of the above. But if I'm a bacterium floating in the microbiome or attached to mucus, and you've just eaten a meal, and so I encounter this let's call it like a wave of polyphenols arriving into the colon, what exactly does the bacterium sense or experience or do? Can some bacteria consume them? Are some bacteria killed by them? You know what I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, there's classes of bacteria that have specific enzymes to break them down in smaller molecules. The first one is they will have hydrolases to cut down the sugar that are most of these flavonoids are attached, and they will consume the sugar. They will then open the ring of the complex polyphenol, and they will break down the molecule in smaller fraction and eventually release the content in CO2. When they are fully metabolized, the bacteria will consume the molecules. But some classes of molecules are not all degraded, and they will interact either with the bacteria proteins, and they might have an impact on, that's what we call the antibacterial effect of many of these bacteria, of these polyphenols, is that they might cause in specific bacteria cell wall disruption. They can have an impact on DNA disruption. They can inhibit enzyme. One of them is alpha amylase, so they will, in certain cases, interact with degradation of starch and polysaccharide. They can chelate nutrients, and if you are consuming large quantities of polyphenols, and when I talk about large quantities, it's more than 3-4 grams, they can eventually lead to anemia because they will fix iron. So they do have an impact on the microbiome and on the bacteria themselves, being antimicrobial and antifungal.
So they're really talented molecules. I mean, they're multifunctional. They perform a lot of functions in the microbiome.
Yeah, we wrote a paper where we coined the term duplibiotic. it's still controversial, but they have two main effects. They have an antibacterial effect in specific classes of bacteria, in particular gram-positive Enterobacteriaceae, but they also have what we call a prebiotic-like effect because they will interact with the host, and in particular with the epithelium, to induce the production of mucin, and let's say recreate kind of a niche for bacteria to grow in the gut. And many of these bacteria are beneficial bacteria like Bifidobacteria, Ruminococcus, and in particular Akkermansia muciniphila, that responds all the time very well to polyphenols. And often you will see blooms of Akkermansia muciniphila when you are consuming polyphenols or you are treating mice with polyphenols.
But the effect is, if I understand you correctly, kind of indirect. It's not that the Akkermansia or the BIFs are actually metabolizing the polyphenols, but the polyphenols are inducing mucin production, which is then selecting for, so it's kind of through the holes.
Well, it's a complex interaction, but in the polyphenols will, due to their antimicrobial effect, have an impact on the microbial community. And this condition will impact the production of short-chain fatty acids, but also the bile acid environment in the gut, and may influence the growth of specific bacteria. And Akkermansia is quite resistant to many bile acids, but it also interacts with the epithelium to increase the amount of mucus and recreate this niche where many bacteria can colonize and favor Akkermansia. But we just recently uncovered, and this is a paper that is under revision right now by a former PhD student of mine and the lab of Willem de Vos, we just encountered that Akkermansia is using polyphenols as a mean of sequestering iron. And it's basically chelated, proanthocyanidin can chelate iron, and Akkermansia muciniphila has the machinery, the proteins to absorb the iron, this complex of polyphenols and iron, and will absorb it, take up the iron, and excrete back the polyphenol into the lumen. So it uses the polyphenols for its growth. So this is an interesting mechanism that is starting to be uncovered right now.
And is the impact of polyphenols on a complex microbiome, is it predictable in any way? I mean, obviously, you'd have to know the composition, presumably, of the polyphenols first. But is it like taxonomically predictable almost that certain phyla will go up and certain phyla will go down? And
we know that specific classes of polyphenols, if you think about a flavanone, which is a compound you will find in the polyphenols you will find in citrus, we know very specifically that they have antimicrobial effects against a number of bacteria. Among them are often Enterobacteriaceae and Shigella, E. coli, and a number of Klebsiella. Though these are very well described, and the mechanism for their antimicrobial effect is quite well described. The problem is that we rarely consume polyphenols in a pure form. They're always a mixture, a very complex mixture of many different classes of polyphenols, of chemicals. So in some instances, you will have one class that will have an impact on specific bacteria, but other that might not have a direct impact on a specific bacteria. So you have to understand this as a complex mixture that have many effects on many different bacteria. So in this sense, it's difficult to attribute to one polyphenol an antimicrobial effect. So it's complex in this sense.
And obviously, most of us consume quite a lot of plants in our diet, maybe not enough, but quite a lot of plants, and we get a lot of polyphenols that way. But do you think that if we want to really manipulate the microbiome in a certain direction, you'd have to start taking purified polyphenols or concentrated polyphenols of one sort or another?
I would think that it's the easiest way is to consume them in a pure form. And if you are consuming plants and fruits in their native form, you will have you will consume polyphenols, but also polysaccharides and fibers. And you could always design a polyphenol with fibers and have both effects of the two types of molecules. But again, this can be obtained by having a regular diet enriched in plants in general.
And polyphenols, you've said, are associated with certain health benefits. What are the specific health benefits that have been, you know, shown to be associated with polyphenol consumption?
Well, there are many. There are really a lot. First of all, in cardiometabolic health, it's been shown that they will reduce inflammation at the level in the intestine, but also in adipose tissue and other organs. They will improve diabetes for those who have glucose, insulin sensitivity, lack of insulin sensitivity. They will have impact on improving cognition function. This is quite well described. And in some instances, they've been involved in cancer, but there are so many different types of cancers that we cannot be specific about that. But the impact on diabetes and obesity is quite well described, and it correlates very well with their role in the modification of the gut microbiota.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you is, you know, how much evidence is there for mechanism that how much of the health benefit is directly transmitted through the microbiome and how much of it is due perhaps to the direct action of the...
There's certainly more than 1,000 papers that have been published on the mechanistic of it in animals. Unfortunately, there's not that much on randomized trials, but it's coming now. We can see some positive impact of polyphenols on health. I think one of the most important study was that of the COSMOS study that you might be aware of, study that was conducted by Howard Cecil at Harvard, which was a randomized trial with 22,000 people that took a class of polyphenols that are flavanol, which contains tannin and epicatechin as the main polyphenols in their extract. And they gave that to the subjects for five years. And they were able in their cohort of more than 20,000 people to show that they were reducing the incidence of cardiometabolic event and cardiac event by more than 20%. So there's not even a drug that is reaching these effects at this stage. So it's really, this is probably the most interesting study. But in animals, we showed many times with different types of fruits and different types of polyphenols that they were contributing to improve the metabolic health. We published in particular a paper, a very bright student, Fernando Anhe, published a paper in Gut in 2015, if I recall, yes, where we fed the mice with cranberry polyphenolic extract. And we were able to, in mice that were fed an obesogenic diet, we were basically avoiding the increase in weight when the mice were consuming the polyphenol at the same time. And in the study, we were really, we were basically the first to show, and the paper is now becoming kind of seminal, a seminal paper, because it's been cited almost more than 1,000 times now. The cranberry extract was stimulating the growth of Akkermansia muciniphila and reducing metabolic endotoxemia, so improving the epithelium impermeability. The gut barrier function was improved by the polyphenol. So we have, at the same time, a metabolic improvement, but we can show that this metabolic improvement comes from the modification of the microbiota and the improvement of the gut barrier function. So the links are now starting to be made between these three elements.
Yeah, there's a tremendous logical, compelling kind of flow to that set of experiments. And we put links in the show notes to both that large human cohort study and the paper you were just talking about. It's just such a fascinating area, and many of our listeners will be interested in prebiotics and probiotics. Do you see any match-up link? I mean, synbiotics are the combination of fibers, prebiotics and probiotics. Do you foresee a time, or do you think we should be there already almost, of co-feeding polyphenols and polyphenol-utilizing probiotics?
I think there's certainly a lot of opportunities in this area. We know that the polyphenols will trigger and favor specific bacteria, bifidobacterium in particular, Akkermansia muciniphila. So the idea might be to develop a symbiotics with an encapsulated polyphenol at the same time as you are introducing this probiotic bacteria. So this is one approach. But I think I prefer another approach, which you could call a niche engineering, where you could consume a specific diet that would promote the specific niche for, let's say, a health benefic bacteria or probiotic type bacteria. And this, we are starting to understand now the role of polyphenol in this and the polysaccharide in the creation of these specific niche for good bacteria. So I think this is probably an approach that I find more interesting. While the other approach of designing a capsule that would provide both polyphenol and the bacteria is also a possibility.
I mean, the approach you described is completely understandable, and it is very along the lines of the prebiotic kind of approach. It's essentially, yeah, you're right, niche creation. But I just thought, because there's the symbiotic, prebiotic, probiotic approach, maybe something similar could be done with polyphenols. And you talked about the one downside, at least, of maybe, you know, that you shouldn't overconsume polyphenols because anemia, I think, was the case you gave. Is there a risk? I mean, there's a risk with everything, of course. Everything comes with benefits and risks. Of, you know, somebody saying, oh, polyphenols sound great, I'm going to eat as many of them as I can every day. What are the risks there?
As I told you, they interact actively with proteins. So if you would consume more than 2-3 grams of pure polyphenols, you'd probably be inhibiting many digestive enzymes and reduce the energy efficiency. So that's one obvious effect. But when you look at the toxicology of polyphenols and that are associated with the diet we normally consume, there you can take up a large quantity of them without any negative impact. You can easily consume 3-4 grams of polyphenols a day, and that would, you might find on the long term some in comfort with changing your gut microbiota, but in the short term, that's not an impact. And EFSA in Europe is, let's say, for green tea, which contains a lot of polyphenols, they will prevent you. They say you should not consume more than 800 milligrams per day to avoid any adverse effect. But normally they are pretty safe molecules, and they're always associated with other polysaccharides or other proteins. So they are buffered by your diet and the matrix of your diet. So they don't have usually a very toxic effect unless you consume them pure in very high concentration.
So if somebody was listening to this and they thought, okay, I'm convinced I want to eat more polyphenols, what are the best sources, or what are the best natural dietary sources? Obviously there's supplements and so on, but how would you increase your consumption of polyphenols through diet?
Small fruits, apples, chocolate.
Oh, that sounds good.
Most fruits actually are a good source of polyphenols. And if you take crude fibers, they will also contain a lot of polyphenols. So having a diet which is rich in plants, and when you consume broccoli, you will take up glucosinolates, but you will also take up polyphenols at the same time. So it's not one or the other. Consuming plants is a good source of these polyphenols. And the recommendation is to consume at least 800 grams of flats a day. And if you do this, you will consume your daily allowance of polyphenols easily.
And does cooking have any impact on polyphenol? No?
No. So they're pretty pretty stable during cooking, and they might actually allow the release of, make them more, let's say, bioavailable, even though I don't like this word that much because it sticks to the pharmaceutical approach of ADME, absorption, metabolism, excretion, distribution and excretion. But it will release the polyphenol, which can have an impact in the gut, in the ileum, and the colon afterward.
And is there something you're working on right now that you can kind of give us a little hint of? What do you think is the future in this field?
Well, I think we still need to understand the role of these molecules in clinical trials. So this is one aspect that we are looking at. One area that is also very interesting is the gut-brain relation and how polyphenol can have an impact on modulation of cognitive function. There's a lot of interesting data on how consuming blueberries, cranberries can improve cognitive health. We published on this topic, and we were in randomized clinical trials, and we were amazed to see that consuming blueberries could improve in a cohort of and a group of people suffering from a mild cognitive decline. We could improve and basically cure their decline by consuming the equivalent of about 300 milligrams of blueberries per day. So that's not a huge amount, about a cup of blueberries. And that does have an impact on cognitive function. How it works needs to be determined. Is it through the gut and the gut modulation that will have an impact on the cognitive function? That is a question of debate, and I think that's an area where you will have a lot of research being done. We are working now in the lab to look at the impact of polyphenols on bile acids, and there's really interesting work being done on different minor type bile acids that are conjugated with amino acids that could be utilized as a signaling function through the body. We're also interested in the modulation of polyphenols in the endocannabinoid pathway. We know that the gut has many endocannabinoid receptors, and that polyphenols can interact with the endocannabinoid pathway and be involved in appetite regulation. So that's an area that we are looking into it, and we will have a paper coming shortly on this topic.
It's absolutely extraordinary. Eve, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm absolutely fascinated by this idea of the cup of blueberries and the mild cognitive dysfunction. It's extraordinary to think that you could cure a cognitive defect with such a simple and pleasurable intervention.
Yeah, yeah. A mild cognitive decline.
Of course.
But still, it's we are starting to understand the mechanism of action and how that takes place. So yes, that's the reason why you should consume, I would say, about a cup of berries and other polyphenol-containing fruits every day.
Yeah, I hope I do already, but I'm certainly going to make sure I do from now on. Eve, thank you so much for joining us, giving us your time. We really appreciate it, and the best of luck with your search going forward.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Science, Microbes and Health podcast from ISAP. Check the show notes for links and further information on this topic. You can also send us your feedback, questions or topic suggestions by emailing info@isapscience.org. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to this podcast so you never miss a new episode.